on 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice. And now your host, the Rogue Announcer, Jeff Smith.
And I am the Rogue Announcer, Jeff Smith. And this is Rogue Talk for March 15th, 2019. And I am so happy to be back behind the microphone today. Yeah, I was on the morning show this morning with Pastor Gigline and back here today for Rogue Talk. So I'm pretty happy about that. We had to take a week off last week of both the shows for a couple of different reasons. And I don't like missing the shows. I enjoy being here with you. And if you'd like to call into the show, you can do that at 541-299-0498. Once again, that number, 541-299-0498. And we've got a great show planned for you today. We're going to kind of stick in the news a lot today, taking a look at some various stories that either are fresh in the news or stories in the past week or two that have piqued my interest, that we're going to take a look at some of those. And we've also got our intern is here. Hunter is here. And Hunter and I, at the end of the show, we're going to talk NFL. The NFL draft is coming up next month. And there's been a lot of stuff going on with players changing teams, whether through trades or free agency. And so we're going to talk to Hunter about the NFL draft, which will be a lot of fun. And we might ask Hunter what he's been doing here lately and see how things are going with him. We're trying to get him onto a baseball broadcast, and we will get that. In fact, we'll do more than one, but we tried to get one this week, but unfortunately the baseball team was playing on Wednesday. Hunter can't cover games on Wednesdays, so we'll find out all the stuff going on with Hunter. But we're looking forward to getting the first baseball broadcast with Hunter. He's looking forward to it as well, I know. And so we're excited to have him back in the studio today. And so we'll talk to Hunter in a little bit. A couple other ways you can reach the show if you'd like to. You can send an email, and that would be to feedback@943thebridge.com. And you put Rogue Talk in the subject line, and that email will come right to me. And in fact, if I was on the ball and you sent me an email during the show, I would answer it right here on the show. But sometimes I don't always catch those as they're coming in. But the best way, if you've got something you'd like to add to the show again, is to call in. And that number, one more time, 541-299-0498. And also you can go and like us on Facebook, Rogue Talk on Facebook. And you can also communicate with me through Facebook Messenger if you prefer that way. So taking a look at some of the news, probably the biggest story today, other than the attack in New Zealand. I'm not going to talk about that because, frankly, I don't have much information on it. I just haven't had time to dig into that story. But there was obviously some sort of a, I don't know if you'd call it a terror attack or what, but where a mosque was attacked by a gunman and, you know, some people are dead. And again, I just don't have the facts in front of me on that story, so I'm not going to try and add anything to that. But the other big story, in this country, Trump has issued his first veto of his presidency. And I guess what's most interesting about that is that the Republicans are still in control of the Senate, which means several Republicans had to vote in favor of the bill that was vetoed in order for it to pass. And of course, this was a bill that came out against his emergency proclamation on the border. And that's something we've talked about a little bit here, and it's definitely something that can be debated. I'm not a huge fan of these emergency declarations, but what I will say is he absolutely does have the power to do that. I forget what year it was they passed the bill, the emergency declaration bill. It was back in the 70s, I don't have that exact date in front of me, but nonetheless, he does have that power. Whether or not it would be an abuse of that power to make this declaration that he's made, again, that's up for discussion for sure. The interesting thing about this story for me is because I support the border wall. I think ultimately it's something that we probably should do, but I'm not a fan of this declaration necessarily, but I am a supporter that he has the right to make the declaration, and you know, we can deal with those consequences as we go. But the interesting thing that I find about this was the selective outrage of the Democrats and the media, and I'm being redundant there, but because as I recall, the previous president talked about his having a pen and a phone, and he would basically do what he wanted with his pen and his phone, including the DACA. That was done as a presidential order, and it was done after the Congress failed to pass legislation related to that. So this one's kind of a flip-flop. We've got the president making an emergency declaration, which is completely within his rights according to a bill that was passed by the Congress several years ago, many years ago. And now they're passing a bill to rebuke him for using the power that they gave him. So it's a little bit interesting, but you know, when Obama was creating DACA out of thin air, there was not a whole lot of pushback from Democrat politicians, and there wasn't a whole lot of pushback, frankly, from even Republican politicians or from the media. And it was just as illegal, if you want to call it that. It's probably not the best word. And maybe more so because he created legislation out of thin air. President Trump isn't creating any legislation. He's, again, I don't agree with the emergency declaration, but it's not quite the same thing. And so the selective outrage on the part of the media in particular, I find a little interesting. That wasn't a story that I wanted to get too deep into today. But it does strike me as interesting that it was this particular emergency declaration that has led to President Trump's first veto of his presidency. So kind of an interesting subject, but kind of, I think, more interesting is some of the side points related to that than the actual thing. Because the portions of wall that he would like to build with this emergency declaration aren't going to happen anytime soon. They'll get tied up in the courts, and there's all kinds of things that go into getting those things done. You know, there was a story recently where there's a contractor, I think in North Dakota, maybe South Dakota, that claims they can build all of the wall that he wants for a much lower price. But of course, you can't just go, oh, okay, go ahead and do that. There's a process they have to go through. So there's all kinds of interesting tangents to this story, but we'll see how things play out in the future. I think one of the other big stories happening this week that has been quite interesting and that hasn't, you know, that will is still unfolding is this college admissions cheating scandal that's going on. And of course, the main reason it became a big story is because there was a couple of Hollywood stars that were among the big names that were part of this scandal. Lori Loughlin, who most of us know from the name's escaping me. It was a family show, and my brain went completely blank. But and Felicity Huffman, who was on Desperate Housewives and has been on some other shows, and she's married to William H. Macy, who we know from lots of different movies and such, but he apparently isn't being charged in this, but his wife Felicity Huffman is. And again, there's still a lot more to come out on this story. There was various ways that the cheating was going on. There was cheating on SAT testing that was taken. There were people that were students that were presented as athletes that weren't really athletes. And so there's already been some coaches that have been fired and put on administrative leave because they may have been involved in this scandal. And I guess one of the most interesting things, they were talking about Lori Loughlin. She was on Full House. That's the name of the show. And then, of course, the spinoff or the reboot, Fuller House, I think it was called. I believe she was on both of those. But anyhow, her daughter, as part of this cheating scandal, got into USC. And they spent quite a bit of money to get her into USC. Now, no disrespect to USC, but if you're going to spend Hollywood money getting your child into university, I would think it would be more like Harvard or Yale or maybe even Stanford, but I just don't lump USC into that same category. I'm not sure why, but I'm not sure that was worth it. But the other interesting thing with Lori Loughlin's daughter is I guess she's a big like YouTuber or some sort of social media star, and she's come out and said she's only going to college to get the college experience. She really doesn't care that much about college. So maybe mom and daughter should have talked before they decided to. And again, we don't even know how many of the kids knew that the parents were involved in this cheating process. I mean, in some cases, it would be hard for them not to know. But in other cases, you know, who knows? It's, you know, we don't know. Parents will do strange things for their children. And this ranks right in there. But, you know, another side note about this is Lori Loughlin's daughter is still, and I'm just using kind of her as this the example of this. It's not the only example, but her daughter's at USC. She's still at USC. If she wasn't qualified to go to USC, if she couldn't meet the standard without some sort of cheating, how is it that she's still there, that she hasn't flunked out? I think that one of the residual things that's coming out, or at least that is being the magnifying glass is being shown on in this whole scandal, is not the fact that there are people that are willing to do a lot of things to get their kids into these schools, is why aren't these kids flunking out? And the reason is, once you're in these schools, they're not interested in you flunking out. They're not. I think this is really showing us a big glaring problem with our education system right now, specifically the university system. Now, I'm a proponent of getting a lot of the government money out of the school system, out of the university system. You can't do it all at once. You couldn't just pull the plug on all government funding. That's not a realistic way to do things. That would really put a lot of people into chaos. However, the colleges have come to figure out that all of the Pell Grant money, that's guaranteed money for them. They know it's coming in. They know they're going to get a certain percentage of all the Pell Grants that are given. They're going to get a certain portion of that based on the students that they take in. So it's free money. They know that since the government has taken over the student loan program, those student loans are guaranteed by the government. And so, again, to the university system, that's money they know that's coming in. They know those loans are going to be approved. They know that money's coming in. And most experts that have studied this issue have said that has inflated the cost of an education because that's their baseline now. They know how much government money they're going to get. So that's the baseline. That's zero. That's zero for their budget. Everything above that is what they can get, you know, in other ways. But they know that money's going to come in, and that it's inflated the cost of an education. And on top of the fact that the education costs have been inflated so drastically, the value of the degree that you're coming out with has almost, I wouldn't say it's gone away, but it's flatlined. It's not what it used to be. Now, taking it back to this cheating scandal that's been going on, too many people are wrapped up in the prestige of where their kids go to school. And in a vast, vast majority of jobs out there, they're not looking at what school you went to. They're looking at what degree you have. And there's a couple of things that need to happen, I think. First of all, we need to push employers, and it would probably start with larger employers, to get away from this system of a degree that just gives you this automatic step toward a career. Because a lot of these degrees qualify you for nothing. And I what I mean is, they don't give you any of the job skills that the job is going to have. They just give you the accreditation that the employer is asking for. And so that's the first thing, is employers need to take away some of the necessity for some of these degrees. In a lot of cases, I think they'd be a lot better served if they took these kids right out of high school and put them into, you know, training programs where they're training them to be the employee they need them to be. Because the college system isn't doing that, yet they're requiring these kids to go through the college system. So there's a lot of things that I think could change, but the interesting thing to me, or the two things are, you know, like, again, take it back to Lori Loughlin's daughter. She's not a scholar. I mean, I'm not trying to insult her. I'm not either. I'm not someone that would do well at Yale or Harvard or Stanford, but my talents are in different places, is what I'm saying. So, and I think she's in that same situation, but they wanted so badly the prestige of getting their child into USC, which I don't find all that prestigious, but nonetheless, they do. And so they wanted to get her there, but to what end? To what is it doing for her career? Now, if you're going to be a doctor, or you're going to be a lawyer in certain areas, not even all lawyers, but maybe you want to go into a certain types of law, or maybe you want to get into government by becoming a lawyer, there is some prestige tied to what school you go to. If you're going to be a certain kind of doctor, you know, going to one of the best medical schools may be the way to go. It may further the type of career you want. Maybe you're going into a certain type of surgery where only the best get to do that. And so, yeah, you're going to want to go to one of the best medical schools. I get that, although, you know, I'm not sure that that's a good measurement of your skills. It's more of your measurement of your acumen to get into a school. That's not always the same thing. But in most cases, you know, if you're getting, I don't know, you're getting a business degree, it doesn't matter if you get it from UC Berkeley or University of Oregon. They're very similar schools. They have different strengths and weaknesses, but as far as prestige goes, there's a similarity there. And employers don't really care in most cases. They want you to have the degree, but in most cases, they don't care, you know, where it came from. So I find the scandal interesting in that it's shining a light on some of the failures of our education system, not because they were able to do the cheating scandal, but looking at as a whole, most of these kids that got in from this cheating scandal are still in school. Why haven't they flunked out? Because again, the university system doesn't produce what it was intended to produce, and it's an interesting thing. It tells us a lot about the politics of education and whether anything meaningful would come out of what we're seeing out of this. I doubt, but it's interesting to look at. And like I said, I like taking a little different approach at these things. You know, everybody's caught up in, you know, being angry because a few kids got in that shouldn't have, and that meant other kids got left out. And, you know, I get that part of it, but I think there's a lot bigger stories coming out of this than just the actual cheating scandal. So I've talked a little bit more about those first two stories than I intended to, so we're up against our first break. I've got some more local stuff I want to get to you, so we'll get that right after this break.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. The American Civil Liberties Union claims President Trump's veto of a resolution terminating his national emergency declaration is meaningless. Anthony Romero, the ACLU's executive director, says the courts will be the ultimate arbiter of the declaration's legality. Public Citizen, another group, is also taking legal action. Greyhound is no longer allowing U.S. authorities to drop off immigrant families inside bus stations, forcing those who have been released from custody to wait outside until they have a ticket. Greyhound says it's experiencing an unprecedented increase of individuals at certain bus terminals and that travelers need tickets to get in. Internet companies and social media platforms were scrambling to remove video footage filmed by a gunman in the New Zealand mosque shooting that was widely available on social media for hours after the horrific attack. On Wall Street, the Dow by 139 points. More details at srnnews.com.
Broadcasting to Rogue River, Gold Hill, Weimer, and beyond. 94.3, The Bridge.
With SRN Sports, I'm Michael Harrington. Let's start with overnight NBA action. The defensive-minded Jazz pull away in the fourth quarter and coast to a win over the Timberwolves.
Defense and Donovan Mitchell's team-leading 24 points powered the Jazz to a 120-100 victory against the Timberwolves. It snapped the host's two-game home losing streak. Karl Anthony Towns was Minnesota's top scorer with 26, but he fouled out with 4 minutes to go. Despite the numbers, Utah center Rudy Gobert was pleased with his matchup against the Wolves big.
He's a very talented player, and it's always a good challenge for me. But I think we did a great job, you know, as a team. We won the game by 20.
Gobert turned in a double-double, 10 points and 13 boards. Utah out-rebounded Minnesota 49-38. The Wolves collected a seventh straight road loss. J.P. Chunga, Salt Lake City.
Elsewhere, Denver got the better of Dallas 199. This is SRN Sports. More NBA Finals for you. Pacers 108, Thunder 106. It was the Magic over the Cavaliers 120-91. Celtics 126, Sacramento 120. And the Raptors beat the Lakers 111-98. In the National Hockey League yesterday, Penguins 5, Sabres nothing. It was the Islanders over Montreal 2-1. Capitals 5, Flyers 2. Ottawa beat St. Louis 2-0. Lightning 5, Red Wings 4. The Jets down Boston 4-3. Dallas 4, Minnesota 1. Arizona over the Ducks 6-1. Nashville 3, Kings 1, and Florida beat the Sharks 4-2. NFL news, according to a person with knowledge of the deal, the Seahawks have reached agreement on a two-year deal with offensive lineman DJ Fluker. Fluker was a key influence in Seattle's resurgence as the top running team in the league. The Raiders have released 2018 leading receiver Jordy Nelson, as well as backup quarterback A.J. McCarron, to create some salary space. This is SRN Sports.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. And as I mentioned before the break, I had some things of local interest I wanted to cover. Not a whole bunch of stuff, but there's a couple of things I wanted to talk about. One of the things is the Rogue River Elementary School PTA had a Lego and artistic build night, and that was this past Tuesday. And I've got the results of that. I thought it would be fun to recognize some of these grade schoolers. We don't get to talk about them too much. You know, most of our focus here on Rogue Talk is with the high schoolers. And you know, we talk a lot about their sports, but we also talk to FFA and Miss Rogue River and any other of the programs or clubs that want to be, you know, that want to be highlighted. We're happy to have them here. But the Lego night, they broke it down by grade, and let's take a look at the results from that. For the kindergartners, first place went to Ethan Jackson, and second place went to Emery Wardle. And for the first grade, this is my granddaughter, or actually my soon-to-be granddaughter. I consider her my granddaughter now, but she will be after this summer. Jocelyn Coldsmith was first for the first grade, and Brody Casey was second. For the second grade, Jonah Jackson was first. Zach Anderson was second. For the third grade, Ella Pritchett was first. Samantha Casey was second. For the fourth grade, Allie Heilman was first, and Drew Grenade was second. Of course, we had Drew's dad on the show a while back. Fifth grade, first place was Josiah West, and we had a tie for second place. AJ Kaplan and Jackson Dabrowski were tied for second for the fifth graders. And for sixth grade, Caleb Kramer was first, and Victoria Green was second. And then the winners for the artistic build, Zachary Forbes was first, and Colton Mulder was second. So congratulations to all of you kids from the elementary school. What a cool night. I actually didn't get a chance to go over and see. I would have liked to have seen what Jocelyn was doing over there and all the rest of the kids. I actually heard about this the day it was happening, so I didn't have the opportunity to get over there. But I did want to give a big congratulations to all of those kids, and I saw some of the pictures on Facebook. In fact, if you go to the Rogue River Elementary School page, I believe there's a PTA. In fact, I think this post was from the PTA page. They've got some pictures of some of the kids and some of their creations with the Legos, and so what a cool thing to do, and we're happy for all of those kids. So another story from the younger kids that we haven't really covered too much. The middle school wrestlers finished up their season, and at the regional meet, Perrin Nelson was fourth at 175 pounds, and also at the regional meet, Tony Isom went 5-1 in the 132 pound class. And that was good enough for third place, which also got him to the state meet. And Tony was 1-2 at the state meet. His two losses were to the eventual third and fifth place winners at the state tournament. So congratulations to Tony Isom and to Perrin Nelson and to all the middle school wrestlers for a great season. We're proud of you. And what a great thing there. And finally, let's get some results from the Chieftain Sports. Now, track has not started. They've started practice. They haven't had a meet yet, so we don't have any results yet for the track team. But let's take a look at Rogue River Baseball and Softball. The softball team opened their season on Monday night. That was a game we had right here on 94.3 The Bridge. And they beat Riddle on Monday night, 11-1. So a great start for the Lady Chieftains. And they continued their winning ways last night. They went to Eagle Point last night to take on Eagle Point's JV squad. And they beat them 14-10. And that was a game after one inning. They trailed 5-1, but came back to win it 14-10. And on the baseball side, unfortunately for the Chieftains, they've only had one game so far this season. That was their home opener, and that was on Wednesday night, and that was a 7-0 loss to Brookings Harbor. And at the end of the show, we'll have the upcoming schedule for the Chieftain teams. But we're still expecting a pretty good season from the Chieftain teams and the baseball team, most notably. A rough start for the season. They struggled to generate much offense. In fact, I think there was only two or three hits in the game for the Chieftains. I don't have the box score in front of me, but just couldn't generate much offense. But once they get that offense rolling, they're a good enough defensive team and have good enough pitching that I think it'll be another successful season, much like we saw last season when they made it into the state playoffs. So that's it for the local stuff. So let's move back to some of these stories I've been looking at that, again, are either newsworthy of the moment or just have an interesting angle to them that I found interesting. One of the things is back in 2017, I did a show where we talked a little bit about the minimum wage and the so-called fight for 15, where there were, you know, a lot of people trying to promote a $15 minimum wage. A lot of this was focused on the restaurant industry or the fast food industry in particular. And I saw an interesting story this week that coming out of New York City, that's giving us a little bit of another look into how these things are playing out. We've heard some stories out of Seattle where there's been some mixed results. Of course, it depends on who's doing the study. There was a study out of UC Berkeley that basically, you know, painted the picture of the $15 minimum wage as a huge success for Seattle. And of course, the numbers don't really play that out. They left out some of the important components that go into judging how well or, you know, how well that $15 minimum wage is working out, or I really should say increase in minimum wage, because not all of these have taken it all the way to 15, but they've increased it artificially. And, you know, most of the numbers have been not great. Some have been horrible. Some have just been, you know, maybe inconclusive. But there's really no numbers that are pointing to this being a successful program. The UC Berkeley study, you know, wanted to point to the fact that the wages are up for these workers. Well, that's kind of a narrow view, because when you raise their wage, yes, their wages go up. That's a foregone conclusion. The problem is they didn't look at the hours. A lot of these employees' hours have been decreased. They didn't look at how many job losses there have been in specific industries, such as, you know, fast food or the restaurant business in general. So it was a bit of a narrow study, and it really doesn't paint the right picture when you take into account all of the different numbers that come out of something like this. It's a little more of a dismal look than what they may have tried to make it look. And you know, without getting into the politics of it, there were some interesting connections to the people that did the UC Berkeley study. So it doesn't seem to be very credible. But going back to the story coming out of New York, some of the latest numbers don't look really very good. Since they implemented the $15 minimum wage in 2015, or their $15 minimum wage plan. Again, a lot of these plans were phased in as the Oregon plan is. They phased it in over time. In Oregon, they made it different for the Portland metro area than it is for like us here in Southern Oregon. So it's even more artificial. I get the idea of what they were thinking there by doing it that way. But again, it sort of highlights the fact that this is very artificial to just, you know, arbitrarily change wages instead of letting the market determine wages. But anyhow, getting back to this New York story, they implemented their program in 2015, and they showed the greatest plunge in restaurant jobs in almost 20 years. So right there, now again, you have to be careful with correlation and causation. You can show a correlation there. You can't necessarily, you know, say that that's the cause, but it's definitely a contributing factor to that. In fact, in a 2018 study, more than three quarters of the full service restaurants said that they reduced employee hours, and a third of them said they eliminated jobs in 2018. And then in the limited service restaurants, which is more like fast food and that kind of thing, in an equal number reported they would reduce hours in 2019 in this year. So about three quarters of the limited service restaurants said that they would reduce employee hours in 2019. But even more striking to me is that more than half of them said they would eliminate jobs this year. So that's, you know, a third of the full service restaurants eliminated jobs in 2018, but more than half of the, or that was the full service, but more than half of the limited service jobs are going to be, or excuse me, employers are going to be cutting jobs in the coming year. So that's not good news for the restaurant industry. In fact, in December of 2018, restaurant jobs in New York City were down almost 3,000 jobs over the 2017 numbers. And the 2.5% decline in March of 2018 was the worst decline in restaurant jobs since 9/11. So, and of course, we know why there was a big drop in restaurant jobs in 9/11. There was a big drop in a lot of things in New York City in 9/11. And when 3,000 people perish in one single spot in New York City, clearly we understand what happened there. So it's the worst drop in restaurant jobs since 9/11. Again, I'm not going to apply causation to all of this, but the correlation is pretty strong. It's pretty evident that artificially raising wages is not a good thing to do. Again, the results in places like Seattle have been, you know, the results have been mixed at best. I would say they're pretty negative, but, you know, again, there's competing studies that say, you know, try and say other things, but at the very least, it hasn't been a help is the way I think I would characterize it. There was another study done in the Bay Area, specifically for San Francisco, that showed that, you know, a similar effect would happen there if they were to raise wages to $15 an hour in the restaurants there. And again, the restaurants get kind of used as the whipping boy of this whole idea of raising minimum wage, because I think it's because where you see the starkest contrast, you know, you've got on one side the people that want $15 an hour minimum wage. They demand a living wage, and they think, you know, they kind of use the, you know, fast food industry as you know, they're taking advantage of people, and you know, people can't live on minimum wage. And all it does is it shows, one, they have little respect for fast food workers. And you and some of you might say, well, wait a minute, they're trying to get them better wages. They do respect them. No, they don't, because they're using them as the measuring stick for why we should, they're basically calling them the least among us, you know, in the employment class, they're putting them at the bottom. Well, and in a way they are, but they're supposed to be. That's what entry level jobs are for. It's where you learn. It's where you have your first job and you learn to do that job. And maybe you move up in the company, but in most cases, you move to another job that's a little bit better than that one. And that's the way it works. And, you know, like my son's first job was at McDonald's, and they've treated him pretty well at McDonald's. I have no complaints with McDonald's. He would like a little bit better job. And if he gets a little bit better job, he'll work there. And then he's getting ready to go off to college. He'll go to college. He'll get the skills for what career he wants from college. And when he gets out of college, guess what? He's going to get a better job. And so whether you do it through college or you do it through an advancement in your career in the job that you're working at, there's plenty of people that are managers at places like Walmart or McDonald's or you name the chain store that work their way up. They started as a stock boy or a cashier or, you know, one of the lower level jobs, and they work their way up and they prove themselves. You know, we've got a Canadian company that has been advertising locally because they're part of the group that wants to put a natural gas pipeline and a depot or a facility in I believe in Coos Bay, and the pipeline would come down and go to Coos Bay where they could fill ships with, you know, their product or train cars or whatever it is they want to put this liquefied natural gas. And the company's been advertising locally, and they're called Pembina, and I don't know a lot about them, but what they've been advertising is that a lot of the people in their company have done just what I was talking about. They've worked their way up through inside the company, that they didn't require, you know, a college degree. But if the job that you want requires that, then that's one of your stepping stones. But again, it's a you know, entry-level jobs are not meant to be a living wage job. You're not supposed to live off of a minimum wage job. You do what most people do, and you have that job to get you to a better job, and that's the way it's supposed to work. And what happens is if we inflate the wages for the minimum wage jobs, it makes it harder for those teenagers to get that first job where they get the proper work ethic trained into them. They get, now my kids had it pretty easy because I'm a tightwad. If they wanted neat stuff like iPads and Xboxes, I made them earn it. They often came to work for me for my business, but other times they found other ways to make money. And we used to do little deals where, you know, okay, you want an iPad, and okay, I'll give you the last $25 or $50 toward the iPad, but you've got to earn the rest. And so I tried to instill a work ethic in my kids. And I understand that not every family has that opportunity to do that. As someone who's self-employed, I was able to, child labor laws don't apply to me. So, you know, I could use my kids as slaves. No, I'm kidding. But I could teach my kids work ethic because I had a job to offer them. You know, it wasn't a full-time job. I, even in the summertime, you know, my sons worked for me the past few summers, but it's not, I wasn't giving him full-time work, but I was giving him as much as I could afford, and enough that I could teach him a work ethic. Well, some kids have to get that just by getting that job. They go get that job at McDonald's and they learn a work ethic and they learn to treat customers right. And then, you know, I'll keep it local. Maybe their next job is at Dutch Bros because Dutch Bros has a certain expectation of what kind of people they want to hire and how they treat the customers. And some of us think that culture can be a little bit annoying when they're hanging out the window and making fake conversation. But I'll be honest with you, a lot of the kids that have gone on to work at Dutch Bros move on to do other things because of the work ethic they learn there. And again, those, not all of those conversations are fake. I have two or three friends I've made that are people that have worked or are still working for someone like Dutch Bros, where it wasn't the way that they engage you wasn't fake for them. That was their personality, and that's how they got the job there, was because they fit into the culture there. And so, again, we learn these things by doing. You make mistakes. In fact, you know, I've got Hunter sitting here with me, and we're going to talk to Hunter, you know, in just a bit here. We've been working on a little promo project together to do a promotional clip that we can play here on the bridge to promote Rogue Talk so that maybe people listening to other shows can find out about Rogue Talk if they haven't found out already. And we've done several takes of Hunter doing this read for this promo, and it's a learning process. It's the same learning process we all go through in anything we do. You know, when you first learn to hit a baseball or maybe a golf ball, you learn the right techniques, and then you practice, and then somebody teaches you the next thing. They take you the next step, and you practice, and you practice, and then they teach you, and you just keep taking steps and taking steps. And that's what minimum wage jobs are for. That's what entry level jobs are for. And if we inflate it to try and make it a living wage, we're robbing the opportunity of not just teenagers, but anyone with no job experience. They're not going to get those jobs because the competition is higher for the jobs when they pay more. And we're excluding people that need that training. They need that first step to learn how to be productive people in society. So we started on the fight for 15, but this is why this story is important to me, is that when we artificially mess with things in the economy, the outcome is usually not good. And what I see with this is the outcome is we're robbing entry-level workers, teenagers, and other entry-level workers of a chance to get that first, you know, get their foot in the door, get that first step up the ladder. And I had some other stories that I wanted to talk to, but I want to leave us enough time to talk to Hunter. So we're going to take a break, and we'll come back with a little NFL talk. Don't go away.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. New Zealand's prime minister says the primary perpetrator of the killing of at least 49 people in two Christchurch mosques was living in Dunedin, a seaside city south of Christchurch. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said Saturday the Australian suspect had traveled around the world and spent sporadic periods in New Zealand. Police say homes around a location of interest in Dunedin have been evacuated as a precaution. 51 women are suing the U.S. Olympic Committee, its board members, and high-ranking officials for failing to prevent their abuse at the hands of imprisoned sports doctor Larry Nassar. The lawsuit was filed in federal court in Denver. It details abuse dating back to the late 1990s. One of the victims was 8 years old. On Wall Street, the Dow by 139 points, the NASDAQ rose 57, and the S&P advanced 14. More details at srnnews.com.
Keeping you informed, giving you the good news. You're listening to 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice.
Oh, I wish there was a way to find out what events are going on in Rogue River.
There is.
There is?
Yeah, the website for 94.3 The Bridge.
They have Rogue River events on their website?
Yeah, for Gold Hill, Weimar, and Grants Pass, too. You can even submit your own event for everyone in town to see. And if it's on the website, they automatically talk about it on the radio, too.
That's awesome. What's the address to this site?
It's 943thebridge.com.
N-I-N.
No. Just type the numbers. 943thebridge.com.
Oh, 943thebridge.com. Hey, look, they have the latest local news on there, too.
They have everything on there. 943thebridge.com.
My savings are gone.
Okay, where were they last?
Here, right before I spent them on that vacation to Aruba.
Weird. Not weird. Not saving now means no money later. For free ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk, and we are going to talk NFL with our intern, Hunter Arnsdorf. But before we do that, just very quickly, the upcoming schedule for the Chieftain sports. Monday, Lady Chieftain softball, 4:30. That game will be at home. They'll be taking on Illinois Valley, and we will have that game right here on 94.3 The Bridge. And then again next Friday, we'll have a doubleheader for the baseball team from Marshfield when the Chieftains travel to take on the Pirates. First game at 2 o'clock, and that will be a doubleheader on Friday. And the track team kicking off their season, they had two events scheduled for this upcoming Tuesday. I believe they have chosen to go to the Brookings Harbor Icebreaker. You can double check with the high school on that. They could have also gone to the Crusader Relays, but our team doesn't participate in all of the relay events, so I believe they're choosing to go to Brookings Harbor for that tournament. Also tonight, the Mail Tribune All-Star Classic basketball games will be played at Kids Unlimited. Girls play at 6, boys play at 7:30. Jesse Langfield from our girls team will be playing in that game, and Aiden Norris from our boys team will also be playing. So that's tonight at Kids Unlimited. I don't have the entry fee in front of me. I believe it's $7 or $8 for adults and $3 or $4 for students. But I don't have that in front of me. I apologize. But that game is tonight. And finally, the elementary school PTA has a daddy-daughter dance coming up. You can contact the PTA for more information. It'll be on Thursday, March 21st from 6 to 8 p.m., and it's $10 per couple. And again, you can get more information if you contact the Rogue River Elementary School PTA. And now, welcome back to Rogue Talk, Hunter Arnsdorf. Welcome back.
Thank you, Jeff.
So we were talking off air about the NFL. A lot of cool things have been happening with players changing teams. A couple of notables: there's been players, the Raiders and the Giants have made some moves. Tell us what those two moves were.
The Raiders got Antonio Brown from the Steelers, and the Giants sended Odell Beckham to the Browns.
So probably two of the top two, maybe top three receivers in the league have changed teams. Odell Beckham Jr. is now with the Browns, which if you had said that a year ago, you would have went, man, that poor guy, you're going to be stuck with the Browns. But they've got a promising young quarterback with the Browns. He had a pretty good season, Mayfield, right?
Yes.
And so he had a pretty good season, so that could end up being a good spot for Odell Beckham. He, Eli Manning, not the quarterback he was when he won a Super Bowl or a couple Super Bowls, I think. So could be a good fit for Odell.
Definitely.
So now, what about the Antonio Brown going to the Raiders? Do you think it's a bigger loss for the Raiders or a bigger loss for the Steelers or a bigger gain for the Raiders? Which do you think?
I think it's going to be the bigger loss for the Steelers.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'm curious to see what the Raiders are going to do. They need a lot of help. They only had 4 wins this last season. And one more thing we could talk about, Kyler Murray. Do you think he's worthy of the number one pick? And do you think the Cardinals are actually going to draft him?
I believe he will go to the Cardinals. He'll deserve the number one pick.
You think so?
Yes.
I'm not sold on him yet. Of course, I'm a little bitter because my Oakland A's drafted him and he chose not to sign with them. They weren't offering near enough money for him to sign. But I'm not sold on him as an NFL quarterback. But, you know, the league has changed a lot and... you know, he might do all right. Well, Hunter, we get off the air. We're going to figure out what baseball games you're going to be covering, and I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks, Jeff.
And that's it for Rogue Talk today. Everybody be good to one another because Rogue Talk
You've
is
been listening
over.
To Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge. Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice. 94.3 The Bridge. Or on demand at 943thebridge.com.